This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It is Thursday today. I should have looked up to see what episode number it is. I think it's 109, but don't hold me to that. It's been a good week. Well, it has been a good week, but it has been raining like crazy around here. Thankfully, we did not get the kind of huge storm that Alabama and some of the other southern states got yesterday. Wow. That thing was huge, and they're talking about hundreds of people being killed in that storm with the dozens of tornadoes. And I mean, that sounded terrible. We didn't get anything like that, but we had plenty of rain for several days, to the point when the sun finally did come out, one of my coworkers looked out the window and he said, "Look at that! The sun is shining!" I said, "Yes, what is that?" So, you know. But today, the sun is out, the wind is cool. It is a gorgeous day today, and it's supposed to be a gorgeous day tomorrow as well, so looking forward to that. I did get the big boy haircut. Well, more than the big boy haircut, I got the army haircut on Friday. Went out to Sarah Asher's, who is a longtime family friend, and got her. We had some discussion for a while as to how short it was actually going to be, and I did want to go really short, but I didn't want it to be so short that I would get ingrown hairs or anything like that. And she said, "Oh no," she said, "you're not going to get that." She said, "but do you want me to take the clippers to it and make it a little longer?" I said, "you know," I described the thing with tonsure in India. And she said, "oh," she said, "wait a minute. I saw that on The Amazing Race." Sarah is a big fan of The Amazing Race. In fact, Sarah was one of the finalists for one of the series on The Amazing Race. I think she said she was, her and her friend, they were like number 15, and they only took the top 12. So that's how close she was to being on that show. She's a big fan of that show. And she said, "oh, well, on The Amazing Race, they did that, where this lady had to get her head shaved." And I said, "yeah, that." She said, "oh, okay." She said, "I know what we're supposed to do." So she got her clippers out and put my hair up all in lots of ponytails, and, you know, and I've got the pictures uploaded on my website, so they're out on my Facebook account. And anyway, so that's fun. Obviously had lots of different reactions. Knew I would get lots of different reactions from getting to cut this short. Some people have really liked it. Some people have not liked it at all, which is fine and doesn't really bother me, because, frankly, I don't have to look at it, so it doesn't bother me. I'm still getting a little bit used to seeing myself in the mirror, because I forget, and then I look and go, oh yeah, that's right. And I have started, I don't know how long I'll continue this, but I have started taking a picture of myself every day with a little app called Everyday. It's an iPhone app that helps you kind of position yourself from the picture before. So, because I'm going to do one of those time-lapse things, the Everyday application will do all of that and do the time-lapse thing. So I thought, you know, as long as I'm doing this, I might as well just take a picture every day as my hair grows back out so we can see what it's like. So the initial plan now is to take a picture every day until I get my hair cut again. And we'll see how that plan works out, but that's the plan at this point. Anyway, so it was fun. I think the funniest reaction that I had from getting my hair cut was on Sunday, which was Easter. We had a bunch of people over to the house. Had a really lovely time. But my mom, she couldn't quite get locked in to the fact that her son no longer had long hair. My son-in-law has really short hair, so every time I would walk by, she would think it was Alan. So she'd make some comment to Alan, usually about what a wonderful and pretty baby he had. And she, "oh, you just have such a beautiful baby." And I'd say, "well, I think Claire's, oh, you're Philip. I said, "right, Mom." One time I went by my mom and she said, "you know, you just did such a good job making Clara. And I said, you know, Mom, I didn't have much. And she said, oh, you're Philip. I said, I didn't have much to do with this one. She said, well, you did. I said, right, but not on the front lines of this one. So anyway, so it's been fun. It has grown out a little bit, you know, already because it's been almost a week. So it's growing. And it will be quite a while before I can actually pull it back, probably 2.5 years or so. But it'll be fine, and then we'll just do this again. Because you get the most hair out of it this way when you just go ahead and, you know, take the clippers to your head and away you go. So that's been fun. In other fun news, I was just reading an article today that was comparing and contrasting the Mujahideen, who of course ousted the Russian army, and the Taliban, and comparing the differences. And there really is some fascinating differences between them. Apparently in Afghanistan, their history and their tradition is that warlords battle and conquer areas, and then because their soldiers are not paid, what happens is the soldiers then pillage and loot the people they conquer, including their women. So, and that's how they get paid. And in fact, he was relating some stories of a warlord who had conquered an area and then wanted to see a list of all the women who were attending a school because he was going to divide them up among his soldiers. Okay, so not the greatest thing to be a woman in Afghanistan. But what they were saying was really different about the Taliban is that the Taliban's focus was not just to conquer areas as tribal warlords, but the Taliban's focus was to take over the entire country so that they could put in Sharia law, I think it's called, and so they could impose Sharia law, and that in fact they broke tradition in that they did not loot and pillage and plunder and take the women and exploit the women of the people they conquered, because they were trying to follow their religious convictions and traditions, and so they didn't think that was right, which is kind of an interesting take on it. But they were saying how in the Taliban you had very little education per se, except this religious zeal, and you said so you had people who knew nothing of the outside world because they had blocked it all out, who were simply trying to establish this national religious theocratic state because they wanted to bring in this kind of holy country of Sharia law. And so that's pretty interesting. But what was the funnest, that was even funnier about all this, is they were quoting out of a book, and I think it was called The Extreme Tourist, and they were illustrating one of their points that a lot of these people in the Taliban had very, very little larger world experience. They just didn't know anything outside their country. And so they had broken into the house of one of their conquerees, and he did say they didn't loot and they didn't take advantage of the women, but the Taliban did want to disarm everyone, and so they would come into houses and search for weapons and take them all because they were trying to be the only people that had weapons that could fight. Well, they got into this guy's home that was a little more liberal-minded, and he had a Rocky poster, Rambo poster on the wall. And, you know, there's Rambo, and he's got his little scarf on his head, and he's, you know, bare-chested, and he's holding this big machine gun. And these Taliban guys saw the poster, and they said, yes, and when you see your brother, tell him, or your cousin, I forget which it was, when you see your relative, tell him that he must give us that machine gun, that he must give that machine gun to us. He's trying to tell him, it's not my brother or my cousin. That's a movie poster. It's a movie. No, when you see your relative, You must tell him he has to give us that, and you must tell us where his location is so we can go get that machine gun from him. And they said that the guy could never convince them that, in fact, it was just a movie poster. And eventually they arrested the guy and threw him in prison because he wouldn't tell them the location of his relative so they could go get the machine gun. So, little Taliban humor there. Anyways, I thought that was very cute. This week, not really any new topics this week, but just kind of a follow-on for a couple of topics that I've done in recent weeks. And as long as new information had come out, I thought I'd go ahead and do it now where it was kind of fresh on my mind. Really, two topics. One was the topic of, just as a follow-up to what I was talking about, sugar last week. Really fascinating article. Is sugar toxic? And I talked about that last week. Well, over the weekend, I went ahead and watched the YouTube video by a scientist named Lustig. I think is his name, L-U-S-T-I-G. The video is called Sugar, the Bitter Truth. And I would highly recommend to anyone who is interested at all about nutritional health and the effect of consumption and what it does to our bodies in terms of what we eat, that you watch this video. It is absolutely fascinating. It's a collegiate lecture, so there's a lot of chemistry in it. The guy is a good speaker, though, and he does an adequate job of explaining what he's talking about, so it's not completely opaque when he's talking about the chemical reaction, but here's some of the takeaways that I had from watching. Oh, sorry, I was moving a cord. Here's some of the takeaways that I had from this. He shows chemically in this that he calls it fructose. That fructose, I call it fructose, he must know what he's talking about. That fructose is in fact treated differently by the body than glucose. Glucose you find in pastas and carbohydrates and that kind of stuff. Your body converts those carbs to glucose. Well, fructose, which you find in fruit, but this guy said, you know, fruit's okay because it's bound with fiber. And he said, I like to say that when God made the poison, he packaged it with the antidote. And so your body can deal with it better. But when you're talking about getting 40 grams of sugar in a can of Coke, whether it's high fructose corn syrup or whether it's just straight table sugar, it's the same thing. Your body deals with it the same way. And we had talked last week about some of the known things that goes on now. But one of the interesting things that came out of that is he starts off his little talk saying, what do the Japanese diet and the Atkins diet have in common? I guess the Atkins diet says no carbs, you know, proteins and those kind of things, but stay away from carbs because that's the problem. Whereas the Japanese diet says, no, stay away from proteins, do a lot of carbs. And he said both of them work. He said, what's the thing that both of them exclude? And he said, it's fructose. That's the thing. Because once you have a buildup of fructose or buildup of the chemicals that are caused by fructose consumption in your liver, you develop this metabolic syndrome and you really need to clean that out because your body's ability to digest and to work with the necessary chemicals like insulin is degraded because of your fructose consumption. So that, I mean, he just kind of reinforced the stuff that was in the article. But the other thing that was really interesting to me was the fact that he pointed out that the chemical reactions that are going on inside the liver, which the liver is the only organ in the body that can do anything with fructose, whereas glucose can be used by your entire body, the liver is the only thing that can do anything with fructose. He was saying that the chemical reactions that are done in your liver on fructose are nearly identical to the chemical reactions that happen in your liver as your body is trying to process ethanol or alcohol. that component in alcohol that makes us drunk and causes beer bellies and all those kind of things. So that was fascinating to me, that really there's not much difference in terms of what it does to your body between sugar and ethanol. And all these years that we as good Christian people have been looking down our noses on people who drank alcohol while we were over noshing on all of our cookies and cakes and Cokes and all those types of things, we were basically doing the same damage to our body that alcohol was doing to those people over there. The only difference, this professor points out, the only difference is that sugar does not affect the brain like alcohol does. And so that's why alcohol is regulated. And he said that he did not expect ever to see sugar being regulated by the government, because it's not an acute toxin, it's a chronic toxin. And it takes years and years for the effects to be seen. So, really fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating talk. I highly recommend it. It is an hour and a half long, but it's really, really good. The other thing that was kind of a follow-up to something I've been talking about the last couple of weeks, was the article, "Why Do We Let Our Girls Dress Like This?" There was a subsequent article that came out that asked the question, why do parents allow their children to dress like this? They're little girls. Why do parents allow their children, their young girls, to dress in a sexualized manner? And the author was talking about being in an airport the other day and how that looks like somebody's doing some cleaning. Oh, they are doing some cleaning. Just a second. I may need to roll down the window and say, hey. You all are really getting ambitious. That's true. Oh, yeah. I donated it. Yeah. To do it about every 3 years or so. So. 10 inches. 10 inches. So, yeah, it's going to be a while before I can grab it again, you know, probably 2.5 years. But once I get it grabbed, then it gets easy. It's just getting past that stage. So it'll be about 3.5 years. We'll do it again. So, yeah. It's good to see you all. Have fun. Hi, Becky. Anyways, those are our new neighbors that just moved in. So got to do the neighborly thing. Anyways, so the other thing that was a follow-up this month was an article called "Why Do We Let Our Children Dress This Way?" And the author was talking about being in an airport and talking about this, you know, young lady that he saw and how she was all dolled up and had the, you know, dangly earrings and the cute little stuff and the little sweatpants that said "Juicy" on the back and all this. And she's 8 years old. And his whole thing in the article he went through, oh, and he did have one other little thing in the article that I had not heard. I just went, wow, are you kidding me? Somebody messed up on that one. He was talking about how, you know, the businesses and stuff that put this stuff out, he was talking about Abercrombie and Finch and that, or Abercrombie, whatever it is. Anyways, he was saying that Walmart at one point in the juniors department had put out a pair of pink panties that said across the front, "Who needs credit cards?" Now, just think about that a little bit. That the message is, well, I'll just let you think about it, because I don't even want to talk about what the message means of that, but think about it. Pink panties with across the front says, "Who needs credit cards?" Okay, so I just went, what? Anyway, so he was doing this whole article from the viewpoint that the real problem here, I'm backing into my garage, the real problem here is parents. Because if there wasn't, while it's interesting to imagine the PowerPoint presentation that the salespeople would go through at somebody like Abercrombie, where they said, now we're going to put out padded bras for girls, He said, the fact of the matter is that no business out there is going to produce a product that they have don't have a reasonable expectation that it's going to sell. It's not going to happen. And if they would produce some product like that and nobody would buy it, they would never produce it again. But the fact that it keeps coming around, we have, you know, outrage and then they disappear for a while and then they come back, outrage, disappear for a while. The fact that it keeps coming back around means that somebody is buying it. Hence the title of the article, Why Do Parents Allow Their Children to Dress This Way? And it was interesting because he traced it back to the fact that, yes, little girls want to doll up like their favorite movie stars or their favorite singers, but you have to be the parent. Excuse me a minute. You have to be the parent and say, no, we're not doing that. And he chalked it up to the fact that parents weren't willing to stand their ground and say, no, that's not appropriate. So it's an interesting article. Honestly, when it comes to girls, I'm wondering if the answer might be a little more insidious. Because I would agree that potentially there are quite a few parents out there that just want to be loved by their kids and don't want a conflict by their kids, or would rather just throw money at their kids and let their kids go and buy whatever they want. But as the guy pointed out in the article, how are 10-year-old girls going to get to the mall to buy those things unless their parents are going to take them, or some parent is going to take them? And while I think certainly a component, perhaps a large component, might be directly attributable to parents simply wanting to be liked by their children, which in and of itself creates an environment for failure. Not that there shouldn't be a good relationship between parents and children, but if your whole drive is to be liked by your child, what's going to happen is you're going to end up being driven by that child's fleshly desires, and you're not going to create an environment of success for them, and in process of that, you're going to sour the relationship between them and you and create an environment of failure for yourself and your child, and it'll just be a huge vicious cycle. But the thought also occurred to me that there may be something more insidious at work, and I will just put this out there and you can think about it. And the example that came to mind for me was Britney Spears' parents. You know, early on when Britney Spears was 14, 15, 16, and she was singing all these songs and parading around in a fairly provocative manner, and people would say, what's wrong with her parents? Why are her parents allowing her to behave that way, allowing her to be sexualized like that? I think there's a fairly easy answer for why her parents allowed that. You know, maybe it was that they just wanted to be her friend, but I think maybe another component of it is they wanted her to be, in their minds, successful. They wanted her to be a pop star. They wanted her to make a lot of money. And they knew if she wiggled around a lot and could be sensual, she stood a better chance of making a lot of money. Now, how does that translate down to little girls? Well, you know, if you're going to buy panties for your little girl that say it's who needs credit cards across the front, perhaps what's going on underneath some of this, perhaps the more insidious thing that's going on, is that parents, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, are conceptualizing that if they raise one hot mama, she stands a better chance of marrying wealthy, and then they stand a better chance of being taken care of. Just something to think about. Because certainly sexualizing your young girls does not create what we would what I would consider to be an environment of success for those young ladies. It just creates an environment where they're going to be used as tools. And frankly, if they're used as tools by the right person, then maybe the parents inherit some of the benefits. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.